CJAM 99.1 FM programming is hosted almost exclusively by community volunteers. The views and opinions expressed on the following program are that of the host and their guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of CJAM FM. For more information and resources, visit our website at cjam.ca.
Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to HandyLink on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Hello and welcome to HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, Ashley Pelissier will be telling us a little bit about her work with Bichette's. What can you tell me about the association?
Okay, so originally we were known as the American Bichette's Foundation. The organization was established in 1978 in Orange County, California by a mother of a young Bichette's patient. The name of the organization has changed throughout the years, but in 1986 the organization was moved to Rochester, Minnesota. And in 1987, it was incorporated as a nonprofit organization under the name of American Bichette's Association. But the IRS granted 501c3 nonprofit status to the ABA in 1989, and then the name was changed to the American Bichette's Disease Association in 1989 with the purpose of clarifying the nature and the mission of the organization. The ABDA supports, educates, and empowers the Bichette's community while continuously advocating for better research, diagnostics, and treatment. We offer a variety of programs, such as the ABDA hotline, monthly community connection events for support, educational webinars, an annual walk and summit, among many other resources listed on our website at bichettes.com.
So, for those who might not be as familiar, how does Bichette's typically affect a person?
Well, Bichette's is a rare multisystem inflammatory disorder. The clinical manifestations of Bichette's are due to a vasculitis, which can involve arteries of all sizes. The disease has does affect the small vessels in the eyes, and the typical symptoms include oral and genital ulcers, skin lesions, ocular manifestations, including uveitis due to inflammation, arthritis, and GI lesions. So it can really affect any organ system due to the vasculitis being throughout the whole body.
So, with the whole host of symptoms you described, is there ever a risk of misdiagnosis?
Oh, absolutely, yes. Normally, it takes years for patients to be diagnosed because the diagnosis is made on clinical grounds, as there's no specific test for the disease. Clinical, epidemiological, and genetic differences exist between patients. So really, it takes years to rule out every other disease to then come to Bichette's disease.
So do you know offhand about how many people are affected by Bichette's?
It's estimated in the U.S. 15 to 20,000, but I do think that that number is very low because it is a very, very underdiagnosed disease. So I really think that number is kind of out of date.
So how does the association reach out to the patient community to let them know that supports are available to them?
Well, we started in 2022 after we realized that people were very isolated from COVID. We started community connection events monthly, which are basically like support groups online because there are Behçet's patients everywhere. And so we started that. We started to really share stories on our social media and connect patients that way because, you know, this day and age, a lot of people connect on social media if they can't meet in person. And so we also started to do monthly educational webinars and really create a sense of community, and hosting our annual walk-in summit brings patients and caregivers together. But our ultimate goals, we direct people to reliable sources of information, including emotional and social well-being resources. We create a sense of community in the Behçet's community by doing so, and reducing the feeling of isolation by hosting these events.
In your time with the association, has there been any success story that stands out for you?
I have been with the association since about 2018-2019. And I would say a good success story would be, honestly, our panelists from our summits that we have. I really would say a couple of the panelists that have spoken for us, and we have given them a platform to share their story and educate healthcare workers and the community, it has really given them a sense of purpose and really amplified their voice, which in turn has helped them advocate for themselves in a healthcare setting. And I really just, I don't have one single success story, but I know that everybody that has spoken for us and found their voice has really done better in their Behçet's journey just from the resources that we had given them to share their story.
So do you have any advice for someone out there who might just be starting their journey and wondering, what does this mean for me, and can I still live a full quality of life?
My advice would be definitely make lifestyle adjustments because this disease does wax and wane, and it might seem scary at first, but you can live a completely normal life. I wouldn't say, you know, your days may look different, but for me, when I was first diagnosed, I thought that my life was over. And, you know, I had to quit school and quit going to work to get my health at a better place. But after I did, and I really got my diagnosis and focused on treatment, I then was able to begin my life and eventually become executive director of the ABDA. And I just really think that making those lifestyle adjustments and being very adamant on advocating for yourself for the best treatment options and the best care team, you can lead a normal life.
So are there any projects on the horizon for the association?
Yes, we have a couple projects. One specifically that I would love to highlight is our patient survey that we will be launching in the next few months. It is a diagnostic journey survey, and it is a ton of questions on the diagnostic journey, who diagnosed you finally, how long did that take, so that hopefully we can then get the data from our survey and publish it in medical journals and present it at medical conferences so that the doctors in the U.S. can have a better understanding of the diagnostic criteria in the U.S. Since the characteristics of the disorder between ethnic groups in different geographic locations are significantly different, we're putting on this survey in the U.S. so that U.S. doctors can really narrow down a set of symptoms that they're looking at and diagnostic criteria to help shorten the diagnostic journey for patients. So once we launch this survey, it should be open for about 3 months for all Behçet's patients to take it, and then we will go ahead and analyze the data and publish it. So the last study that has been done like this on Behçet's patients was, I believe, in 1990. So we were due for a survey like this, and I'm very excited for the ABDA to move forward with this.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you.
course. In this segment of our show, Sarah Ouster will be giving us an update on SOS. So, what's the latest with SOS?
You know what? Just every day we're doing something different, and it's very client-led, so whatever somebody wants to do, we try to make it happen. We're doing something really cool in June. We're going to be going to Toronto to see the CN Tower and Ripley's Aquarium. So I think that's kind of the most exciting thing on people's list right now.
So last time you were on, you gave sort of an overview of the work you do in the disability community. If you'd like to recap that, I'm sure anyone who missed it would love to hear.
Sure. Okay, so I work as kind of a respite worker, so I support individuals in the community and with kind of whatever their goals are. So we get together, we're able to do some fun things, we're able to do some things in the community like grocery shopping and budgeting and just being able to be there for somebody as an added support while they're living their everyday life. So that's kind of what my services are used for.
So do you find that it creates a positive impact on the community, seeing people with disabilities out living as part of the community?
I think that anybody should be able to be out living in their community, whether they have a disability, whether they don't. Those are the things that make up our community, is the people, right? So people with disabilities is definitely an important aspect of our community. So that's a great question, and it's very important to see people that are different than you or than anybody out there living their lives, because that's exposure, right? And that opens up those conversations.
So you mentioned you let the clients lead where they want to go, essentially. Are there any trends or themes in the goals? Anything that you commonly run across, such as, I want to get my own home, I want a relationship, that sort of thing?
100%. You kind of knocked the nail on the head there with kind of relationships. That's a real big one, where people want friendships. They want to connect with other individuals. And I think at the crux of it, that's kind of what we all want, is to connect with other people. So whether that's making a new friend or kind of excelling in the workforce, doing that in a positive way, making those relationships at work, a romantic relationship. So we look kind of for events where with other people where we can engage with others, whether it's going to the gym, whether it's meeting up with other organizations and doing fun things, or even getting some of my clients together with each other to be able to kind of foster different relationships, and then doing that in like a positive way, because not all relationships are healthy, right? So we want to foster those healthy relationships.
So say there's a setback in one of your clients' goals. How do you go about redirecting them to take a step that might advance them despite a stumbling block?
Well, there are definitely going to be setbacks, but I feel like that's a part of life, right? So being able to kind of address what the setback is, and it depends on the goal, right? So being able to address what that setback is, and then just tackle it a little bit differently. Say, okay, what can we do different? How can we look at it and maybe get a different result? Because if you do the same thing over again, you're probably going to repeat the same stuff, right? You're going to get the same results. So seeing if we can do it a different way, maybe break it down into a little bit of smaller steps. Because sometimes we take off a little bit more than we can chew. Example, I would like to drive a car. All right, let's go pick out a car. Well, maybe there's some steps before going to buy a new car, like getting a driver's license, studying for the test, doing all the little steps that let's not go to the dealership right now, right? So we got to break those down into like manageable goals.
Sort of sounds like the example of choosing a field of study and getting a skills assessment to see what might be a good fit.
You got it.
So in recent memory with your work in respite, has there been any success moment that stands out for you?
That's a really good question, and I'm hesitant to answer and put one above another because one person's success moment is going to look different from another person's success moment. One person's success moment might be going out of their house when they haven't been out of their house in, like, say, years, right? Another person's success moment might be, like we just talked about, going and writing that exam and then passing it when maybe before they failed several times, right? So doing things differently in the steps to get a different, more positive result. So I'm a little bit hesitant to answer directly because I think there are small wins every time we meet with somebody. Even when it comes to reading something new, that's a win, right? Being able to try something new and engage with that experience, those are all wins.
So what are the next steps forward in your work?
I think it's being able to just continue with the people that I work with, and much like I mentioned earlier, it's very client-driven, so seeing those goals that people want and then working together to try to achieve those goals. So kind of wherever they take me, let's go together and let's experience that. So there's no like big thing in the future of like, we're going to have a building and we're going to do this. No, we're just going to keep on working together and take it kind of one day at a time, and then hopefully have some fun along the way.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Thank you, Cam.
My pleasure. HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Hey, you Windsor students. Want to get involved with your local radio station and are searching for a summer position? Look no further. CJAM is hiring two Ignite students to fill the roles of Pledge Drive Coordinator along with Live Music and Events Coordinator. No broadcasting or podcast experience? No worries. We're here to train you. For more information on application criteria and requirements, visit our website www.cjam.ca and please send over your resumes and cover letter for either positions at statcjam@gmail.com. That is statcjam@gmail.com. Deadlines for applications is May 21st. Thanks so much.
Welcome back to HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, Ashley Pellissier gave us a little bit of an insight into her work with Bichettes, and Sarah Auster gave us an update on SOS. In this segment of our show, Marcy Yale will be telling us a little bit about AEBC. So what can you tell me about the Alliance?
Well, the Alliance for Equality of Blind Canadians has been around since 1992. So 2 years ago, we celebrated our 30th anniversary. We are an advocacy and peer support consumer-run organization. We have a seven-member board that is all blind, deafblind, or partially sighted at the moment. And it has been since our start, though it may change in the future. We have just changed our bylaws to allow a sighted member to join us, should we find one that is willing to do so. We now have an executive director. We've had one for a year now, courtesy of funding from the, now my brain just, ESDC's, Strategic Partnership Program disability component, that they have funded us. So we are now able to have an executive director, which is changing the way we do our business because our board is now not struggling with administrivia all the time. That's really nice. What else can I tell you? We run an annual scholarship program, which is right now in the middle. It's more than in the middle. Our deadline for applicants is May 17th. And we are providing at least five or six awards with a value of at least $1,000 this year towards the post-secondary education pursuits of blind, deaf, blind, or partially sighted people.
So, if you don't mind, kind of curious, when you mention some of the advocacy the Alliance does, can you tell me a little bit about some of the issues that are the most pressing for the blind, deaf, blind, or partially sighted community?
Let's see. E-scooters, floating bus stops, bike lanes on sidewalks, emerging standards that need to be cleaned up and made stronger. We've done a lot of work on the standards review process that has been happening over the last couple of years. There have been a few standards come out that are part of the Accessible Canada Act, so employment, built environment. We've put through basically what we think should be changed in those standards. We did a lot of advocacy around the Canada Disability Benefit Act, which is now another great disappointment, thanks to Budget 2024. $6 a day is just not going to lift people out of poverty in anyone's mind, at least not in mine. So we did a lot of advocacy on that. We actually were able to present to the SOCI committee at the Senate. And our big ask was that they take away the restriction of working age, which they didn't. And now it doesn't really matter because whoever gets it is only going to get $6 a day. So, hey, it's really sad. Sad result of all the work that everybody put into it. It's quite a shame, actually.
So, in that sense, what would be the ideal outcome concerning things like the disability benefit? What would you like to see for the blind and partially sighted community?
A basic income that makes sense. I mean, look how fast they came up with the amount for CERB. And CERB has had some really good outcomes and some really bad outcomes. I mean, now there are Canadians who won't take low-paying jobs because they think they're worth more. Well, we're worth more than what we're getting. We're getting, depending what province you're in, I think there's a province whose highest amount is $900 a month. How do you live on that? So I really would like to see the government give us the dignity we deserve and really lift us out of poverty. I mean, a minimum, I would say, of a total amount. Like, for everybody that is on any kind of assistance, they shouldn't be receiving less than $2,400 a month. They're on $2,400 a year of this program. Come on. That's ridiculous.
So to change gears a little bit, in your time with the Alliance, has there been any success moment in terms of your advocacy that stands out for you?
Well, our Toronto chapter was instrumental in getting the Ontario ID card to join the other provinces that had government-issued ID cards. And we're fighting with Quebec at the moment. We have some allies there, but it's still, Quebec is the last province without a government-issued ID card. And that's going to be a problem because now the CRA is allowing people to use their government documentation to sign up for an online account without having to wait for an access code to be sent in the mail. So if you're blind, an access code sent in a print piece of paper in the mail could be a little bit of a problem for you. So if you now have a government-issued ID card, you can just have someone help you take a picture of it and send it up to their servers, and voila, you get your access. But if you live in Quebec, you don't have anything. that's government-issued except health card, and CIRA is not accepting those. So we are in an ongoing fight with Quebec to institute an ID card, and as I said, they're the last of the provinces and territories to have one. So we're working on that. To me, when I think of AEBC, I think of the peer support that we provide to people. I think of our scholarship program. I'm really proud of that. I think of the fact that we launched a new website, which is a lot more welcoming and a lot cleaner and more modern than our old one. I've been with the organization for over 20 years now.
So how does the Alliance reach out to those who could benefit from their work?
Well, we have our website, and as you found, we now are putting our monthly newsletter, The Equalizer, up there. And at last check, we had almost 300 subscribers to our newsletter. And considering we only started this way of doing things a couple of months ago, that's not bad. Not bad at all. We use social media more now. We have a YouTube channel. We are on X. We are on Mastodon. We are on Facebook. We attended the Viewpoint Conference in Vancouver and had a table there that was put on by Fighting Blindness Canada. So we had a table there. And a lot of it is still word of mouth. And we're a small organization. We're looking for people that want to advocate. We're not just looking for numbers. So, we're looking for members who want to advocate and want help advocating. Those are the people we're looking for.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
Gotta tell you, my friends, I have a lot of respect and admiration for the way Sarah conducts her respite work, and so much as it's always the best approach to meet someone with a disability where they are and build from that. You can't go in with your expectations, your perspective on how they're going to do things, and expect them to respond in exactly that way. Well, it is true, to meet a goal, you have to put in time and effort, but disability life is all about creativity. It's about thinking outside the box. A person with a disability might see things from a standpoint that an able-bodied person might not necessarily. It's one of the great advantages of having people with disabilities in the workforce, in fact. Bringing that new perspective, that new vision, might not only get the work done, but it might also suggest, for future reference, a new and better way of getting things accomplished. Now, for anyone working alongside a person with a disability in a day-to-day sense, you get the joy of seeing a different kind of progress. As I recently said to a friend of mine, there's no simple definition of progress, but seeing a person take even the smallest step still counts for something. And to that person with a disability, you never know, the realization that they can move forward might lead to bigger and greater steps, embracing the strength that they do have, and understanding that they are a gift to society. They have gifts to contribute to society. That is the fundamental principle of standing alongside anyone with a disability, recognizing that they have something to bring to this world. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal, so get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.